case your Morse code knowledge is not up to scratch. That said, welcome to 6JL's greatly anticipated radio show.
Today we'll be diving into the terrifying world of World War II.
By the end of the show, you should have learned a little bit about medals, propaganda, Enigma machines and rationing and much more.
Let's begin with Ben's war announcement that is based on the powerful words by Neville Chamberlain in 1939.
I am speaking to you from the Cabinet Room at 10 Downing Street. This morning, the British ambassador in Berlin handed the German government a final note stating that unless we heard from them by 11 o'clock that they were prepared at once to withdraw their troops from Poland, a state of war would exist between us. I have to tell you now that no such undertaking has been received and that consequently this country is at war with Germany. Now may God bless you all and may for it as evil things that we should be fighting against. However, I am certain that the right will prevail.
Thank you for that harrowing delivery, Ben.
Now time to learn all about what it means to be a code breaker at Bletchley Park. Over to you, Connor, Theo and Sophie.
During the war, officers and generals wanted to communicate with those on the front lines.
To do this over long distances, they would use something called Morse code.
Morse code is where letters from the alphabet are represented by combinations of long and short light or sound signals.
This allowed for the simple transmission of complex messages across telegraph lines.
However, there was a problem. If these messages were so easy to understand, then they are also easy to hijack. This meant that the Germans could intercept our messages and plan their attacks with insider information.
This is where ciphers were needed, as they turned plain text into what seemed like random letters based on a special key that would be needed to unscramble them.
Unfortunately, the Axis developed a way of communicating with an unbelievably complex invention known as the Enigma machine. The British were desperate to decode the Germans' machine so that we could decode their messages and have a head start on preparing our defences.
The MI5 workers at Bletchley Park made a decision that would change the tide of the war and computing forever. Hire Alan Turing.
Over the years, Turing and his team designed a computer that was known as the Bombe, which was able to defeat the Enigma cipher and decrypt the messages in a fraction of the time any person could.
Because the Germans had no idea the British could read their messages until long after the war, people believed that hundreds or thousands or maybe millions of lives were saved.
What a hero Turing was.
And to think, I always thought Steve Jobs invented computers.
Next, we have an interview by Holly and Maya, who are with Ray, a young boy who stayed in London during the war, and a teenage girl who was evacuated, played by Sienna.
First of all, I'd like to thank Sienna and Ray for joining us today for what is a rare opportunity to interview children who grew up during World War II.
Ray, how old were you at the time and where did you spend the majority of your time?
I was only 6 years old. My father was not able to sign up to the military due to an injury in the Great War, so he looked after me in the heart of London.
For those listeners who don't know, London was a target area for the Luftwaffe. This meant it was rare for children to stay there for the duration.
Do you remember much about London back then?
Yes. Most vivid memories are of hurrying to the underground whenever an air raid siren called. I always made sure my Ted was with me, safe and sound in my gas mask box.
Not all children remained in London. Many were evacuated to the countryside and coastlines. The main reason for this was to avoid the Blitz and try and maintain a better quality of life for our British youth.
Sienna, where were you during the war?
At the beginning, I was living in London, but it wasn't long before my parents thought it would be better for me to be evacuated. I was sent away on a cramped train that was simply awful, but it was worth it, for I arrived in Swansea to my billeting family.
Swansea, that was a popular place for evacuees. Was it very different to your experiences in London?
Goodness, yes. In Swansea, the air was much cleaner and my billeting family owned a small farm which I helped the upkeep of. I also lived with other evacuees that were a similar age to me. We were all pretty glad to be away from the all the bombings and terror they brought.
Thank you both so much for spending your time with us today.
Back to you in the studio.
What a great interview.
Wars always led to technological advancements as each side tries to get an edge of their opponents. Over to Robbie, Lewis and Jack to explain this more.
So every Friday that ever comes along, I get up early and sing this little song. Run, rabbit.
In their attempt to win World War II, Nazi Germany produced a range of wonder weapons. While initially seeming impressive, in reality they all had their flaws.
The first of these wonder weapons is the V1 flying bomb, which many military historians call it the world's first cruise missile. This meant that it didn't need a pilot. Over 8,500 of these buzz bombs were launched towards London from French sites.
The curved rifle, impossibly ambitious yet simple at all at once, was designed to allow soldiers to shoot around corners or over walls.
And just as obvious as the weapon's uses were its problem, the curve sent the bullet crashing into the sides of the barrel, causing both bullet and barrel to break.
The largest artillery cannon ever built, the immensity of this railway gun, also known as the Great Gustave, was 150 feet long, 1,350 tons, and needed 250 men for assembly. Its expensive ammunition was 11-foot shelves, weighing 7 tons each, but even all these numbers hardly captured the scale of the largest artillery cannon ever.
As you can see, the Germans would invest indelible resources on trying to invent the next big weapon. However, historians today believe that they would have been better off making more planes and ammunition for the front line.
Extremely fascinating stuff. We are now taking a short break with some propaganda messages from the British government.
So every Friday that ever comes along, I get up early and sing this little song. Run, rabbit.
Before you step outside, count to 15 slowly or the blackout will shock you. Provide enough time for your eyes to adjust to the darkness in order to protect yourself and those around you.
Together we can do it!
Food is a weapon, don't waste it.
Rationing means a fair share for all of us.
By growing your own vegetables and canning them, you can eat well this winter.
I'm patriotic as can be, and ration points don't worry me.
Oi, shut that door, we must save fuel.
But I need to go to the shops.
Well, how are you planning on getting there?
My friend is sharing her car, I'm part of the local club.
Very wise, when you ride alone, you ride with Hitler.
Sailors beware, sailors beware.
Free speech don't mean careless talk.
If you tell where you are going, you may not get there.
As loose lips.
Sink ships!
Welcome back. During the Second World War, a man named Winston Churchill, known for his elaborate speeches, was elected Prime Minister to save Great Britain.
Jacob has adapted one of
his speeches to capture his inspirational words to the public.
To the question of invasion, I would like to observe that there has not been a time in centuries where a greater threat is upon us. We shall prove ourselves to defend our land, to ride out the storm of war and live on. Linked together, the British Empire and the French Republic will defend our native soil until death. Even though large parts of Europe have fallen to Nazi rule, we shall walk, fly or sail through the dark night. We shall never surrender. We shall go to the end. We shall fight in France. We shall defend our homeland, whatever the cost, on the beaches landing grounds, fields and trees we shall fight. V for victory, V for victory, V for victory.
Thank you, Jacob. Up next is a special edition of Mastermind hosted by George, who is joined by two guests competing for the first prize. Hello and welcome to Mastermind. Today's edition will focus on feralistics, the study of medals. Hundreds of thousands of medals were awarded to those involved in the Second World War for their contributions to different campaigns and in certain circumstances for bravery. Each contestant will have 45 seconds to answer as many questions relating to our topic correctly before the time runs out. 5 points is awarded for each correct answer, but a wrong answer results in -5. Are you ready to go first, Josh?
Yes.
What was the 1939 to 1945 star made out of?
I know this. Solid silver?
Correct. How long did you have to serve in World War II to get the 1939 to 1945 star?
A year?
No, 6 months. What medal will all those who served in Battle of Gazala have?
I'm going to guess that it was Africa, so African star.
Correct. Can you name the missing colour on its ribbon? Light blue, navy, red, and what colour?
Yellow for the sand of the desert.
Just in time, Josh. You scored a 10 points. Lewis, are you still with us?
Yes, I am.
Great. Let's begin. What does the dark blue, light blue and red stand for on the ribbon with British medals?
The Army, Navy and... I know this. The Air Force, the Royal Air Force.
Correct. What medal had a ribbon made of white, red and green?
Easy, the Italy Star.
Yes. What is the Air Efficiency Award given for?
No idea. Pass.
10 years in the RAF. Which is the highest military decoration awarded for valour?
It's Southern Cross. Elizabeth. No, not Elizabeth. Victoria Cross. That's it.
Amazing, Lewis. Well done. You have 15 points and are this week's winner. Tune in the next week for another Mastermind special. Bye for now.
That was intense. Congratulations, Lewis. Up next is our very own great British ration off. I'm suddenly feeling peckish.
Great British ration off. I am your host, Sophie. This is the only show when you'll need to turn your measly rations into a memorable dinner with your family. Today we are joined by two of our finalists who will explain their creations before deciding our winner.
Hello, I am Molly and this week I have been using potatoes grown in my garden to make a classic wartime cottage pie. This only uses 2 people's weekly amount of minced beef, yet it will easily serve a family of 4. Firstly, brown the mince. Add the chopped veggies, add salt and pepper and herbs, add beef stock, stir and simmer for 15 minutes, thickening towards the end. Meanwhile, chop up all the potatoes into small chunks. Place in salted hot water and bring to the boil until tender and drain. Mash with generous blobs of butter or margarine. Add salt and pepper to taste. Place in the oven for 25 minutes.
That sounds like an absolute feast. I can't wait to try it. The top looks crispy and it smells incredible. That was amazing. The gravy inside has tremendous flavour. Well done. Now, let's hear what Fia has for us.
This week I have decided to bake a dessert because there is a war going on. We shouldn't deny ourselves a treat every so often. I have made jam tarts, only using 3 ingredients, flour, margarine and jam. Firstly, rub the fat into the flour in a large bowl. Add water to form a dough. Lightly flour the surface and rolling pin and roll out fairly thinly enough to cut 12 round shapes to place in a greased patty tin. Next, place a heaped teaspoon of jam into each pastry case. Just dollop it in the middle, but do not overfill. Finally, place in a preheated oven for about 20 minutes until the jam is bubbling and the pastry looks golden.
I can't believe something that looks so that good is so easy to bake. Straight away, you can tell the pastry is perfectly thin and crisp. No soggy bottom. The sharpness of the jam is compliments the butter pastry like a match made in heaven. Splendid job, Thea.
In what is an extremely tough decision, this week's winner is going to be Molly for her wartime cottage pie. Make sure you try both of these ration cautious recipes at home. What a show. Those jam tarts had my stomach grumbling. We have to stop there for an emergency announcement from the Air Raid Wardens, Alicia and Harry.
What to do in an air raid?
Here are a few important rules to remember. Get under cover at once. Don't stand staring at the sky.
Don't rush. Take cover quietly and then others will do the same. If you're in the open with no cover, lie down.
If your home is within 5 minutes, go to the shelter and take shelter and keep away from windows. Admit passers-by they need shelter too.
Motorists, get off the main road and park close to the curb. Switch off headlight lamps.
Always carry your gas masks. See that your blackout is complete.
Above all, don't stand staring at the sky. Take cover.
At the end of the war in Europe, the population of Britain were provided with the following message via radio to the jubilance of entire nation. This message has been performed by Connor.
God bless you all. This is your victory. It is a victory of a cause of freedom in every land. In all of our long history, we have never seen a greater day than this. Every man or woman has done their best. Everyone has tried, neither to the long years, nor the dangers, nor the fierce attacks of the enemy, have in any way weakened the independent resolve of the British nation. God bless you all. My dear friends, this is your hour. This is not victory of a party or of any class. It is a victory of a great British nation as a whole. Now we have emerged from one deadly struggle to a terrible foe has been cast on the ground and awaits our judgment and our mercy.
As this message aired in 1945, men, women and children were joyous in the streets and danced all night long.
Thank you for listening to our radio show, and until next time,
goodbye! Goodbye.